This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
Right now, get up to 20% off select online storage solutions. Put heavy-duty HDX totes to good use, protecting what's important to you. The solid, impact-resistant design prevents cracking. And the clear base and sides make items easy to find, even when the totes are stacked. Find select online shelving and tote storage up to 20% off at the Home Depot to organize every room in your home, from your garage to your attic. Visit HomeDepot.com. How doers get more done.
Hey guys, I just wanted to take a quick second to tell you about XOP. You guys, if you haven't gotten your hands on this gear, you are missing out. XOP is constantly innovating to come out with some cutting-edge, lightweight mobile hunting equipment that's top-notch and won't break the bank. Whether you're an experienced mobile hunter or someone just looking to get into it, XOP has a platform, stand, or set of sticks to get you where you need to be this fall. And best of all, it's all backed by a lifetime metal guarantee. This season, I'll be using the Retrograde platform, X2 sticks, and the Mondo hybrid harness. Go build your kit today at xopoutdoors.com. Hunting season is here, and my most used piece of gear that isn't really gear at all is the OnX Hunt app. You guys, you've heard me talk about this forever, and for a good reason. I rely on OnX to help me break down new pieces, learn about areas, plan safe access, and share spots with buddies and loved ones whenever I hit the field. Right now, my most used feature has been the leaf off imagery layer, which allows me to get a better idea of what's beneath the tree canopy and predict where deer will be moving. On top of that, I'm looking at the crop, acorn producing oaks, and slope angle layers to plan my hunts. Whether you're chasing big bucks or you're trying to find that new honey hole for you and your duck hunting buddies, you need to get the OnX Hunt app this fall. Go check it out at onxmaps.com. Fall is here and it's finally time to hit the woods, and this season I'm stoked to be wearing Huntworth to keep me warm, dry, and concealed when I hit the woods. Right now I'm rocking the Durham lightweight pants, Shelton midweight hoodie, and Bluff Woods neck gaiter. That's going to keep me going until the temps start dropping, at which point I'll be layering under the Elkins midweight bibs, which if you haven't heard, they are an absolutely killer piece of outerwear. Whether it's the Elkins bibs, jacket, or vest, this outer layer is lightweight and completely windproof to keep you comfortable when the wind starts howling on those crisp fall sits. My kit this year is in the Tarnin pattern, but you can also check out all of these items in the new Vertec camo pattern as well. Go get yours today at huntworthgear.com. What is going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Wisconsin Sportsman Podcast. I'm your host, Pierce Nellis, and this is your home for all things hunting, fishing, and conservation in the Badger State. Folks, this episode is going to be for all of you guys out there and gals who are still running around with a tag in your pocket, son of a gun. This is I don't know what this episode's going to turn into, honestly. My goal, I mean, the world is our oyster right now. It is mid-November, November 14th as we record this, and I've got none other than the OG himself, Mr. Josh Raley, on the line. And we are going to be talking through what our November has looked like thus far, where our minds are at, what things we've learned, and what our plans are going forward. Because neither of us have a punch tag right now. Josh, how are we doing right now?
Man, I'm, I think the word I used earlier when we first hopped on was sour. I'm pretty sour right now. You know, a couple things with business, meetings, have gotten canceled or moved around or whatever. And I left the woods for those. So I'm pouting like a baby a little bit right now, but, it is what it is. And, man, I'm actually feeling really good. Buck movement has really started to pick up here, in my part of Georgia. I've got a new little permission property. Literally, I'm sitting in my basement right now, and it is the property boundary is about 320 yards from me. So it's right outside my back door, basically. Mm-hmm. And then I've obviously got a couple of other properties that, you know, leases and that kind of thing. And the deer's starting to move, man. The bucks are starting to, the big ones are starting to get on their feet. And so I've got a pretty good bead on at least one really big one and a couple of others that I think I'd be more than happy with. And something about this just feels right. It's like a, I don't know, it feels right to be sitting on a podcast with you in the middle of November. Seems like we've done that. Absolutely. Eight.
Yeah, I know, right? I was going to say, this is what, year three of our, whether they be therapy sessions or rut recaps or whatever, dude. There is, I tell you what, rut hunting and chatting with you go hand in hand. And that's a tradition I look forward to continuing. But yeah, man, you haven't been able to get out in the woods a whole lot so far this year. What has that looked like for you, and how has that kind of influenced your hunt strategy when you have been able to get out?
Yeah, man. First of all, I just want to say, like, it hasn't influenced my strategy in a good way. I'll circle back around to why. But yeah, I've been really, really busy. You and I have talked a lot about how when you're in that building stage of businesses, there are just sacrifices that you have to make, right? Mm-hmm. And I found myself in a position at this time of year where I've sacrificed a lot of family time and I've sacrificed a ton of other stuff. And so now it came time, and I did this during turkey season as well. It came time to decide I have to just sacrifice kind of what I would normally do this deer season. So up until probably September, I don't know, when was it when I finally told you? I was like, dude, we made the call and it's not happening.
It was October. I think it was like maybe mid-October, I think, right? Third week of October, something like that. But yeah, it was, I mean, it came down to the wire. And I think that's the last time that folks heard any updates on that as well. You were hoping to come to Wisconsin. And I think in that episode, you recapped that it just wasn't going to happen this year.
Yeah. So I didn't do a lot of scouting here for deer. We've got a family property that we hunt pretty hard later in the season. You know, our Alabama property goes until February, season does there. So we got plenty of time down there. But like around me, I didn't put much effort into scouting or doing very much. You know, I take my kids primarily over at the family farm. And, you know, right here, I've always planned on just maybe popping out for a hunt here and there. But really, all my eggs have been in the Wisconsin basket. So I didn't do any scouting. I didn't have any trail cameras up until October 29th, bro. I put up cameras on October 29th this year, right? Like, that's a problem. And then,
or did you have sign to go off of?
You know, I didn't have a ton of sign to go off of. And you remember last time we talked, I guess, I zoomed way out on that map of the lease that I was talking about. Mm-hmm. And it's all pine plantation from one end to the other. And there are like a couple of pockets with some diversity. And I was like, that's what I'm targeting. And dude, it was so spot on. Like, it's not even funny. Like, you just walk to those spots and you find sign. Like, where the diversity exists, that's where the sign is, and that's where the deer are. So really quickly, I started getting on deer in these spots on my cameras, which was good. And then I actually picked up, gosh, this may have been the beginning of November. May have been like November 1st or something like that. I got permission on this other little piece of ground here, this little farm not far from me. And so I can hunt the whole farm, but there's another guy who hunts the southern half. And so I've decided, you know what, I'll hunt like the north. I think it's 18 or 19 acres or something like that. And there's a lot of deer on there, man. We're getting pictures of, you know, 6, 7, 8 does in a picture. And there's one buck in particular that I was hoping to catch over there because he's in my backyard here every night. I've only gotten one picture of him over at the farm. It's a llama farm, actually. So I call it the llama farm. So I've only gotten one picture of him at the llama farm, but there's some other bucks that, you know, be good for the kids. There's one that I was showing you that's a kind of a neat looking 6-point that I might would like to take a crack at him. I don't know, but yeah, the hunting has not been great, but how it has influenced my strategy is I've been very, very patient. So like waiting for those right mornings, the right wind, and trying to get the right intel. So like I'm really leaning on my cameras. If I don't have the intel, then I'm kind of backing off a little bit. And those two things have come back to bite me. Number one, I haven't made the aggressive moves when I needed to. And I've had days like yesterday where I have like 4 bucks on camera in daylight, 2 of them are shooters, you know, kind of thing. You know, like this morning I went into a spot finally and I'm climbing down and a little buck walks through and, he walks in front of my camera at this main crossing and it doesn't take his picture. He's out of range. And so I realized that I messed up in the camera placement there. It just wasn't reaching that far. So I'm missing a ton of the picture. So being too passive, and not having enough oomph to go after it and relying on my cameras, I think maybe a little too much, or maybe I just got greedy when hanging the cameras. If the cameras were better hung, I'd feel a lot better about my strategy right now. But, yeah, man, that's November in a nutshell for me. Like that November was the start of my hunting season. I sat, like I said, the very first time when I put out trail cameras on October 29th.
Got it, man. And so, it's a lot to unpack there.
Yeah, man, I'm going to talk on you today because I'm all riled up about a couple of different things. And so like, yeah, you better be careful with the questions. You're going to have to rein me in.
Well, so for context here, you had a client schedule a meeting with you and then back out minutes before the meeting was supposed to start. After you had already climbed down early from your sit. We had plans down, to record our episode here.
But, I climbed down, drove an hour to make the meeting. And yeah, so,
right.
Yeah, it's tough. And I get it, man. Things pop up, you know. Truth be told, I considered sending him a message, being like, hey, you want to reschedule? Because I'm going to be in the woods. But, you know, is what it is.
Yeah. Absolutely, man. That's super frustrating. And I mean, I think a lot of people can relate to that trail camera weight having to be put into your strategy and everything. Because there's a lot of guys who just quite frankly, like I've talked to enough people this year that this rut's just been weird. It's been a really strange, like it's not like, I mean, I feel like this year, yeah, we saw that big flurry of bucks hitting the dirt the weekend of the 8th and 9th. Or I guess it was the 9th and 10th. You know, guys took a long weekend then. Like the 7th to the 10th, I was in the woods on the 7th as well. Like had great action, saw a ton of deer and stuff there. But since then, it's just kind of been this like trickling of rut activity. And at least, you know, this is all going off of social media and stuff like that, which honestly I've been trying to kind of stay off of, this time of year, but I'm kind of with you on the giving a lot of weight to the trail cameras this time of year, and especially the factoring in that trail cams are only a fraction of the picture.
Yeah.
I've had a similar experience so far. So there's two bedding areas, and I didn't expect to be doing this year, but there's a river bottom property that I've been hunting this year that has absolutely consumed me. There's one buck in particular out there which has just spoken to my soul, and I am after him very, very much so. And so my season has looked almost like the opposite of yours, kind of, where I've actually been able to throw a bunch of sits out there. Now, they haven't been all day sits. I don't think I've thrown an all day sit the entire season, but I've thrown a lot of really short little like micro hunts in there, you know, stuff in that 2 to 4 hour range. And guys, the amount that I've been able to learn just through doing that,
yeah,
and through getting in there before light and then walking out during, you know, daylight and everything, and being able to check on certain things and kind of skirt around things and use my binos to figure out, okay, like, well, this trail is more worn down than the other one. Reading tracks more than anything this year, but I'm kind of with you there. I didn't really get cameras out there until late October. I set them up on this bedding area, kind of on the northern part of this property, and it's heavily, basically the bedding area runs north to south, and there was a heavy trail intersecting it from the west. And I figured, you know what? I bet there's probably some bucks in there. There was one little sapling that was kind of ripped up and twisted, so I hung a camera in there. And that's how I learned about this buck. Now, he never was entering or exiting the bedding area in that spot, but he was kind of flanking it. And
dude, did you hear that?
I did, yes.
Through my computer, my phone's ringing. Came through my computer. Sorry about that.
You're good. But he showed up and was just kind of like flanking the bedding area. And I started throwing some sits on him from there and then scouting a bunch from there. But really, like, I've really taken it to heart this year to scout more than I hunt. And especially in October, I was really doing a ton of just covering ground and on my way in and out, trying to find where these different areas are that deer like to travel. And one of the things that has, I'm going to circle back to the trail cameras here eventually, but one of the things that, just because my mind's going this direction right now, one of the things, sure, that has really, really jumped out to me, especially over the last 6 or 7 days, I would say, is how much we influence deer travel with, right, our access and with our just intrusion into an area and everything. And the deer still are going to go to the areas they want to go to. I haven't torched any bedding areas. I haven't like really dove into like the really, really thick, nasty stuff. I'm going to tonight and, hey, tomorrow morning, but
there we go.
I haven't gone there only because we got rain in the forecast all next week, and I hate hunting in the rain. So if I can get this buck killed before then, I would be real happy. But where the hell was I going with that?
You're talking about how you influence that deer movement.
Oh yeah, sorry about that. I'm thinking about this buck again. So what I've noticed a ton was, you know, I try to access from consistent spots so that I'm not throwing scent all over this area. And so I, right, have my one route that I run along the western side of this property and my one route that I run along the eastern sides of this property. And so whether it's blowing, you know, any flare off to either side, I'll take one of those routes and everything. And so what I learned on Monday after I had an encounter with this deer was that all of the deer have been moving exactly where I have not been. So in between these two routes that are maybe 300 yards apart, there is a highway running straight down the middle, equidistant almost from either of my access routes. And so that's encouraging, because then I saw, okay, there's four scrapes on this highway now. Now I know, okay, if I were to go in there, I can set up on one of these scrapes if I want to. And I know where the bedding areas are at. I bumped does out of a couple of them and stuff like that. And you know, I'm doing enough damage to figure out what's going on and kind of just nudge these deer around, but not so, right, much that I'm scaring the hell out of them and totally trashing an area, which, yeah, has been evident by the deer continuing to show up in daylight on this other camera that I have on the southern bedding area, which is where I'm going to focus most of my attention. Now, I would say that's my first. I feel like I am really rambling today, man. You're going to have to rein me in too. Right. But so I don't know, that's been like observation number one for me so far. It's just been like, if you can remain consistent, the deer will remain consistent equally in avoiding you, as long as you know where they're avoiding you. Now, even more light was shed on that on Monday when I was in this stand. I was sitting on this scrape that I've had this camera over, which I'm kicking myself for doing, because you start getting pictures of deer and you start getting some daylight activity and you're like, all right, well, they're showing up on the camera, so I should probably just hunt around that camera, right? And this is where I was going with that trail camera bit there and not getting the full picture, right?
Right.
So I've hunted the spot a couple times. I've hit this tree probably three or four times now and had deer every time that I've gone there. Had a crack at one. He's probably a 2.5-year-old, would be 8-pointer, but he busted half his rack off. And more than anything, he was just a great guinea pig to make sure that the set actually was working and that they had no idea that I was there. Now, at this point, I think they're well aware of that. But on Monday when I sat, I was over the scrape, wasn't seeing anything. I literally texted you at 9:30, I think, saying, it just doesn't feel deery today. I don't know what the deal is, but it just does not feel deery on November 11th. And about 40 minutes later or so, I stand up to stretch my back a little bit and look over my shoulder, and I see a doe just blazing through this river bottom. And right behind her is a spike, followed by a forky, followed by like a little, like maybe like a six or something like that, followed by a little basket eight, followed by this other, like, I think he was like kind of wide, but he was pretty spindly and pretty short, but like, you know, a bunch of 2.5-year-old deer, like 1.5 to 2.5-year-old deer, but like in ascending size, which I thought was kind of goofy. Now they chased her into this thicket. There were some vines hanging down and stuff like that. One of them like dove in full bore and like ended up, you know, running out with half of this, you know, I don't even know what the plant is, but it's like wood nettle or something like that, or some big nasty vine, but hanging off half of his rack, like trailing behind him while he ran. It was super cool. And he dives into this bedding area and I can hear all these bucks, you know, grunting, or meh, they all have different tones and everything. Then I hear some tree branches snapping and stuff. And then I hear burr, 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 really, really deep grunts. I look up and I'll be damned if it isn't that buck that I've been after. Bedded in the area about 60 yards down from where I've pushed thus far this season. Just close enough so that I'm in the chips, but he's still out of the game. Now, all this happened. They came in about 150 yards behind me, looped into this bedding area, chased this. I mean, this poor doe, dude, she was running for her life. And then all of a sudden, this big buck starts chasing all of them. And he's kind of following. He's not leading the charge by any means, but he's just kind of sitting back and observing, but he's still in the game. Now this doe, that all of them run back, they go over to this next little strip of timber, and I make the decision where I'm like, I need to at the very least get over there. Like, that's where the doe is at. There is enough chaos going on right now that I need to at least get over there.
Right.
And so I screw it. I'm just going to still hunt it. I grab my bow, grab my rangefinder, had everything with me, knocked an arrow, and I just start hiking. And I'm watching this, and as I watch this, I see two more bucks that I hadn't seen before on that little finger strip start ducking down into there as well. So I'm like, okay, there's at least like 7 or 8 different bucks in here right now. Like, jeez. I gotta have a shot at something here. Like, something's gonna happen if this chaos continues. And so I get over into that strip of timber, and not 30 seconds later, I hear footsteps running, and this little buck stops, and he's, you know, just a little, maybe 6-pointer or something like that. I didn't really get a good look at him, but I'm like, I could shoot a buck off the ground. That'd be pretty cool. What the heck? And so he sees me. I don't get a chance to draw on him or anything like that, but he takes off. And so I'm like, all right, whatever. They all went down into this strip anyways. So I start walking that way. As I get maybe another 15 yards, what I can only assume is that doe who got right on the edge against the water, so far downwind of everything that these bucks couldn't find her in, like this deadfall here, so that they couldn't wind her. She gets nervous and she jumps up. She starts tearing down this finger or this little strip of timber, and then juts through it and then runs through this open field into the next strip of timber that I just came from. Now, as she does that, I decide I'll keep pushing down that little bit of timber there and see what I can find. As she does that, I catch a little movement out of the right, you know, just off to my right, and the old big dog is running up this little, like, kind of like a staging area, like real thin, kind of sparse, but it's like a really fine tree line. He's running up that, kind of almost going, like, doubling back behind me. So I decided to double back going that way. Next thing I know, he has his nose down. He's outside of the strip of timber that I just came from, and he has his nose down like a freaking bloodhound. And I'm grunting at him. Like, I probably could have shouted at him and he wouldn't have picked his head up, but I'm grunting at him. I'm like trying to catch up to him with everything that I have. And he skirts down kind of along this thing and he's just circling. He can't figure out where this doe went and he's circling out in the open. So I start creeping along this wood line. There's a couple of deadfalls. I get in there, I range him 73 yards. I get up to the next deadfall, I range him. He still hasn't moved yet. 52 yards. I'm like, holy shit, this might actually happen. There's one more deadfall between me and that buck, and he ducks into the wood line. I immediately, as soon as he goes in there, I jump up, I scurry up to that next spot. I'm like, please jump back out. Like, please come back out. I know you're at like 30 yards now. Like, I don't want to take, you know, a risky shot, especially on a buck like this, who's would be the biggest deer of my life. And also just running around like a chicken with his head cut off, trying to find this dang doe. And so right. I see a little bit of movement out of my, kind of like through the brush and everything to my right, like along, like inside the timber. And I'm not quite sure what it is. I don't know if it's that buck. A little spike comes kind of like skirting over, just over my shoulder a little bit to my right. And then all of a sudden I see big body, a big flash of brown. And then I hear some brush shake. And this doe just comes squirting out of there, running right back towards the stand that I had just gotten out of. So at that point, of course, I see the tines of, I mean, the freaking cage on this buck rolling over, following right where she just ran. He's at about 65 yards. So I jump through this little bit of brush, I range him 54 yards. I'm about to close the distance to 30 again. And he finally catches enough wind of that doe that then he takes off after her, head down, and just at a solid clip and out of my life. Go ahead.
No, I've got to know. How close did he go to where your stand was?
So to where my stand was, he was still probably 90 yards.
Okay.
Now,
all right.
What I had thought of doing,
I envisioned him off in the distance, like trotting underneath your stand at 13 yards. And I'm like, no,
no, not quite. However, I did think about tearing down my stand and going to set it up in that thicket where, when they initially all came running in thinking, you know, I remember Ryan Glitzky telling me this, you know, if you see a hot doe come through somewhere and there are bucks following her, like you move your stand and you set up over that spot because another buck's going to smell that and keep coming. Right. And so I'm like, I should tear down. I should just move over there and everything. Now, had I done that, there's a good chance I would have sent you a grip and grin Monday morning. And, I would be in a very different position right now. However, that didn't happen, but you know, it was one of those things where I'm like, I have zero regrets about how I pursued that deer, because had I not gone over there on foot, I wouldn't have bumped that doe who then would have bumped him, or who then would have ran back over to the timber that I just came from, who then would have brought that buck over there with her. So, you know, had I just stayed put, those deer would have just run around that other strip of timber and I would have just watched them from 250 yards away and not been able to do anything. Right. And so after all that too, I go back, I tear my stand down. I'm on my way over to set up kind of in this little area between the two strips of timber. And I see movement. Nice, probably like 120s, maybe 130s class 8-pointer. Sniffing around on the ground where that doe was. He's got a spike with him. Spike looks at me and I just freeze. I crouch down. I'm like right next to this deadfall, so he doesn't really know what I am. He goes back to feeding. I know the 8-pointer is still in there, so I start creeping, and this is all through the open. I start creeping. My eyes are glued to him, and I get in there. His head goes down between, like below a, like a deadfall over on that side while he's eating. I range his body. He's at 48 yards. I'm like, shit, this might actually happen. This might actually happen. So as I'm ranging him, he picks his head up and looks my direction and sees me. Now I'm crouched down. I've got my bow in front of my face, and I am peeking through my strings with my rangefinder, just trying to keep my profile as broken up as I possibly can.
Right. Which
I need to take a quick moment to give a huge shout out to Huntworth.
Mm.
I gotta. Because, folks, every partner of this show is a partner for a reason. I wouldn't be trying to help market for these guys if I didn't believe in their products. And you guys, I have been absolutely blown away by the Huntworth gear so far this year. Josh, you can attest to this as well as a longtime Huntworth user. You've converted me. Now, I will say I was spotted. You don't. No.
You don't get spotted.
Both of us are running around in the Tarnin pattern. Right. And I'll be honest, man, I'm joining the Huntworth side from wearing First Light for the last 3 years or so. I have been warmer and I have been more concealed in Huntworth this year than I was in First Light the past few years. I'm just going to say it. No BS here. Been rocking those Durham lightweight pants. I've been wearing their solid colors this year just because I don't know. Figured what the hell. I wanted to try it out, honestly, and haven't gotten spotted in those. Haven't had a single issue with those. They've got that waterproof seat, waterproof knees. You've seen enough videos of, you know, me posting stuff on social media here, guys, of just wiping off beggar's lice like it's water. Super impressed with that. I was rocking their Casper top and bottom base layers. Unbelievably warm, but not so warm that I was like sweating my butt off.
Yeah. I never had the Casper. I've got a set of thinner base. Their Casper is the thicker, right?
Yep. That's the heavyweight.
Yeah, I had the lightweight base layers, and I wore the bottoms this morning. You know, when I was hunting, I did wear merino wool top this morning because it was pouring down rain, and I was like, I'm gonna get wet, but then I didn't get wet because I wore my Huntworth rain gear. So,
dude, on the note of rain gear, then holy smokes, like the DW, like I thought you were bluffing last year when you said. Yeah, like all their stuff is like water resistant or whatever, but like it's basically waterproof.
Right.
I have found that to absolutely be true thus far.
Yeah.
Especially I've been wearing that Grayling hoodie, which I don't know if that was available when you were
working. It came out at the very end. It came out at the very end, but at that point I was passing off the shows and parting.
Dude, unbelievable outer layer. Take that, pair it with an Elkins vest, and you've got windproof, you've got breathability, you've got graphene heat boost technology, which I was skeptical of the heat boost stuff. I didn't really know what to expect.
Okay.
The graphene is no freaking joke.
Yeah.
That might be the warmest stuff that I've ever worn. Like, it doesn't feel like you're wearing your merino is warm and everything. You've got like the down and everything, and you've got like, you know, the insulating qualities of that. Dude, this feels almost cozy, but not like you're going to sweat your butt off.
Right.
Which is really weird. Like I didn't sweat. I've been hiking like a mile and a half in every single day. And I'll tell you what, guys, not to be TMI here, haven't gotten swampy, and I haven't, soaked through my shirt or anything and found myself shivering in the strand with this stuff. So big fan of that. So,
yeah,
all right, there's our,
hey, I'm going to throw out, and I've said this on this show before, their rain gear is the best rain gear I've ever owned in my entire life. Hands down. I don't care what rain gear you buy. hunting rain gear. I've owned it all and I've gotten wet in all of it, but the Huntworth stuff has kept me dry. Mm-hmm. I hunted all morning this morning. It was raining at 4 o'clock in the morning when I got out there, and it was raining when I left. Like, I literally sat for 6 hours in the rain today. Yeah. And was bone dry on the inside. Maybe a little sweaty. It's not as breathable as their other stuff, because mm-hmm. it's rain here, right? Like, it shouldn't be as breathable as other stuff. Water's not supposed to get in. So,
right.
So I was a little warm, you know, a little sweaty on the inside, but man, it's terrific.
Absolutely, dude. And that's like, their rain gear doesn't feel that much like rain gear. Like, it still feels like you're wearing a hunting jacket. Like, you're still wearing hunting pants and everything. Well, you know what I mean?
It's got like soft suede feel like their mm-hmm. other stuff. I don't know what their exterior is, but it's amazing on the, like, whatever gives it that soft touch on all of their stuff, is terrific. I don't know exactly what that fabric is, but man, it is awesome.
Absolutely, dude. All right, there's our Huntworth commercial for the episode, but
yeah.
But anyways, sitting there, bow in front of my face with my Grayling hoodie in Tarnin on and my XOP retrograde on my back and my Onyx running in my pocket. There we go. Let's check all three boxes there. But this buck stares at me. Looks at me, doesn't really know what's going on, like, knows that I'm there, but I just didn't move. I held that thing right in front of my face, and he went right back to eating at 48 yards. Now, he couldn't smell me or anything. He puts his head down, starts walking, there, takes two steps, and he's behind this clump of, like, three trees. You know, it was, like, kind of a one-tree base, but it had four trunks coming out of it. Mm. And I'm like, now's my chance. I'm going to close the distance, and I'm going to smoke this freaking thing. And I start creeping in there, and I got... Dude, it's always, you take like one step too many and it ruins the whole deal. But I got just a little too greedy trying to get that close. And I think he just must have heard me creeping and then he, or caught a whiff of me. I don't know what the heck was going on, but got the heck out of there and I wasn't able to punch a tag. But I will say this, that hunt, that hour and a half of activity there, has completely changed my mindset and the way that I view this property. Hmm. I feel so, we've talked about blind optimism before. It's not even optimism.
We're always talking about mindset in November. First of all, yeah. I don't know if that's you, if you notice that theme, but yeah.
100%.
Blind optimism, absolutely.
I'm going to reference a fly fishing legend, Chico Fernandez from, a Cuba native who spent most of his career, I think he's still down in Florida. He said, when we went bone fishing, we didn't get skunked. We didn't, you know, have a bad day. We didn't get, you know, the short end of the stick. We didn't screw up a bunch. We didn't struggle. We went out to the flats. We watched bonefish tail. We watched bonefish feed. We watched the stingrays. We watched all that stuff. We never had had a bad day. And dude, that thing, that quote jumped out to me because that's exactly how I've been feeling about whitetails this year. Where I've been burning the can. I think I texted you like last week, dude. I've been putting like at least 20 to 30 miles on every single week for 2 hour hunts. 4 hour hunts, stuff like that, like just busting my tail. And every single time I've weirdly found myself going in with zero expectations and zero disappointment. And, you know, maybe a little bit more excitement if I'm, you know, getting on good deer and stuff like that. But dude, my mindset is probably the best it's ever been in a November right now, because every time I go out there, I just feel like I'm going hunting. I don't feel like I'm getting skunked. I don't feel like I'm getting the short end of the stick or like I'm getting, you know, I'm ruining a spot or anything. I just feel like I'm going out there. I'm checking a box. I'm learning more about this. I'm finding this track. I'm seeing that, you know, a group of does is bedded here today. And I'm just slowly tightening the net.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Watch me eat tag soup at the end of the year, but I'm feeling good right now.
Wes, I want to hear what you think caused that shift for you, because what you just described is, number one, that's the reason that I like to go out of state hunting. It's different on my own place. Like, you know, we go out and get in a blind and eat some Pop-Tarts and drink a Coke. And like, I always mention Pop-Tarts and Cokes. That's literally my favorite thing to do in a deer blind. but like, you know, we, and you either see something or you don't or whatever, but there's very little like learning or challenge or growth or anything like that. It's more about the people that you're with and the memories and whatever. But like, dude, going out on public and just striking out, learning new stuff, not knowing what your destination is going to end up being, you know, maybe have a place in mind, but like, who knows if you'll make it there or if you'll go past it, or, you know, maybe I'll go blow up that bedding area over there because it looks enticing and I want to know what's in there. Or, you know, there's a freedom to it. And I've felt very similar with the lease that I'm on right now. I found a way to make that the case, and it was just to find a pocket. Like, I found a little pocket area that does not have other people hunting in it. And man, I just got in there and had a great time this morning. You know, I went in blind, had no clue what tree I was going to get in. Went too far. I looked up and was like, oh, that's my trail camera. Because I was coming in from the opposite direction. I was like, I've gone like 50 yards too far. So turn around and go back. Like, it just, yeah. And I learned a bunch. And like you said, I don't feel like I got skunked today. I feel like I learned, you know. So what is it for you, would you say, that like caused that mindset shift? Or is it just that it's just different than hunting your own place?
I think it's different than you're hunting your own place, because anything can happen out there. You know what I mean? You don't feel an ownership of what goes on in an area. You are, like you said, you have the freedom of, I mean, everything out there has the freedom to do and be and act however it wants to. And I think being able to remove the, like, peel back the strategy and strip away like the ownership that like sometimes you can develop, and you're like, well, I've got this property and I can only hunt it, you know, this way. And I can only, like, I know that like, from past data, like I have to be in this area on at this time or whatever. And like, it's so easy to over engineer our hunts, I think. And to be honest, man, I was around November 5th or 6th or something. Like, I'd already been throwing these 2 to 4 hour sits since, I mean, October 20th, maybe. 21st, 22nd. Like, dude, I've already been at it for 3 weeks, and I was just starting to get burned out because I was getting frustrated. And there was, everybody talks about that first week in November, right? And how magical it is and how incredible it is. Dude, it sucked out there. For me, it sucked. And I, on top of it, like, dude, I was replaying my miss, not my miss, but I was replaying that bad shot on that buck that I couldn't recover. I was kicking myself for that. I was like, I knew he was still out there. I've been like reminding myself daily that, I mean, that deer's dead somewhere right now.
Right.
Like, that's not a good feeling, but I don't know. I think, and I was talking, you know, in the episode I did with Cam Madursky and, Jacob Sklenner a couple weeks ago, Cam said, like, you owe it to yourself to put as much into it as you possibly can. And I think as long as you reach the point where, like, you know that you're giving it a good, honest effort and you're not skimping and you're doing what you can, it's a lot easier to sleep at night than sitting there, you know, trying to fall asleep being like, dude, I could have gone another 150 yards. I could have tried this, but I hung up. I decided not to. I could have gotten up an hour earlier or something like that. And so I think knowing that I've been, and dude, another big part of it has been, like, my girlfriend has been phenomenal in supporting, like, me going after this deer. Like, she has been unbelievably supportive in terms of just, like, whenever you need to or you feel like you gotta, like, you know, go for it. You know, just communicate with me what your plans are and everything. And, like, you know, when I'm home, I'm still trying to, you know, do absolutely everything I can to make sure that I'm upholding my end of the bargain and everything there. And I'm not just disappearing and hunting, but that's where those micro sits kind of come into play. You know what I mean? Like you get out there for the prime time and you try this different stuff and you throw these different little like darts at it. But dude, she has been fantastic this season. And that's awesome. Look forward to taking her out to a very, very, very nice dinner after I hopefully lay hands on this bruiser. But dude, and honestly too, on the mindset thing, I kind of told you, like this week I've been out of, I don't know, not to sound like hippy dippy about it or anything like that, but I've kind of like reached this little like point of like zen with my hunting right now and like the outdoor pursuits and honestly just kind of life in general, whatever. But like she texted me Monday morning, or no, it was Tuesday. It was after I had that encounter, that crazy encounter with all those deer. She texted me that morning. Once she was up and she was like, hey, like, you know, have a good walk in, like, let me know when you get set up or whatever. And I was like, all right, yeah, we'll do. Just saw a couple does. You know, I just like bumped them, whatever. Cause I went in late intentionally so that I could get in at gray light and I could kind of scout my way in and just try and assess what was going on there. And hopefully, like you said, you'd actually give me this tip to listen for bucks grunting and listen for chasing, listen for the action. Because after the day before where I saw all those bucks chasing that one doe, I was like, if I can find the action, I'm going to get in the action. And so that was kind of how I was approaching that. But I texted her, you know, yep, just saw a couple does, you know, on my way in there. I'll text you when I get set up. And she says, all right, sounds good. Just remember, you're going to look back on this when you're 80 and you're going to be glad that you did it. And I was like,
dang,
so true.
Dude, that's,
like, that's
good.
So true. Like, and that's something that I think everybody needs to kind of just take pause and like, cause when you're 80, you're like, none of us are going to be scrambling. I mean, some of us maybe look at John Eberhardt, like not that he's that old, but like, I mean, that dude's still climbing trees and everything and killing giants. So, but like the vast majority of us are, you know, you think about how much actually goes into it. And we were talking about it that night, even just like, if you shit, you break your ankle, like all of a sudden you can't hike in a mile and a half. You can't climb these trees. You can't, you know, run a mobile setup. You can't sit in or hang in a saddle all day long. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And, I don't know. That was like a big, big perspective shift for me. It was like that morning of just kind of thinking about that and chewing on that and being like, yeah, you know, that is super true. Like we're all just fortunate to be out here and fortunate to have the opportunity to chase these things.
Yeah, that's absolutely huge, man. Like I know, like that question hits hard because I'm, you know, I'm 38. So like my body doesn't feel the way that it used to. And so like I'm noticing things now that I'm like, huh, I don't feel as good after I do that anymore. You know what I mean? Like, boy, that one sticks with me a little bit longer than it used to. So it's like, okay, it's setting in. They're like, okay, there will come a day where like you can't do that. You know what I mean? Like this is limited. And it's, man, it's been making me think. Like my hips are hurting today after a walk in the dark and climbing some hills, and there's a really steep bank that I ended up kind of like literally having to like pull myself up one tree at a time, like trying to get up this little bank, and that I didn't know was there. And it's like, I'm feeling a little sore from that. And, I'm not going to be able to do that kind of stuff forever. Like one day I'm going to hit a steep bank like that and I'm gonna be like, well, I can't go through there. And that'll just be the end of it, you know? Mm-hmm. So, it's a really good question, man. Or a really good thing to say, like, hey, you're going to be glad you did it when you're 80. And then ask yourself that question. Like, hey, I'm thinking about doing this thing. If I look back at 80 and I did it, would I be happy?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, is that going to be, you know, I think Alex Hormozi talks about like answering to your 80-year-old self or whatever. When he's talking about business is like, you know, let 80-year-old you be the judge of your life. And, yeah, it's good stuff.
I really like that. I haven't heard that quote from him yet. Yeah, dude, it's, and you know, it has me reflecting too. Not that we're getting up there that old. I mean, I haven't even cracked 30 yet, but, it's right around the corner though. But, you know, I was listening to this interview with, who the heck was it? think it was Flip Pallet, this guide from Florida. He comes up and fishes the Menominee with Tim Landwehr up at Tight Lines every year. Just a legend. But he
he's a bow hunter too, right?
He's a killer, a killer.
Down in Florida and kills big bucks in Florida where nobody kills big bucks. So.
Yep, off a jet boat. Hell yeah.
Wild.
Dude, he's a beast. Yeah. But I remember I was listening to an interview with him, and he was talking about fishing with his buddy Lefty Cray, who's another fly fishing legend. And he said, yeah, I remember before Lefty died when we were fishing together. Like, I remember the day that we went fishing and Lefty couldn't stand on the polling platform and pulled the boat around. And I remember the day when we went fishing after that, where he couldn't, you know, he couldn't stand up on the casting deck and throw to these fish and stuff like that. And it's just one of those things that, like, we're all going to get there one way or another.
Right.
And especially the time that you have to hunt with buddies and the time that you have to, like, hunt with friends and, like, celebrate one another's successes and stuff, rather than getting frustrated or feeling the pressure to, like, well, shoot, everyone else is killing, but I'm not. Like, what am I doing? Like, I gotta punch a tag here. Like, I gotta, like, you know, have something. Like, that pressure only comes from Instagram. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Your buddies could care less. Like, they all understand. Your buddies care about is that you're, like, getting out there still. And
right.
That you're hunting and that you're having these experiences. And that you come back to camp and that everybody's got a story to tell.
Right.
You know, it's got nothing to do with, because I don't know who the hell said it, but, you know, the whole thing of, like, what's going to happen with all of our mounts once we're dead? You know, like,
your kids or grandkids are going to throw them in a dumpster or try to sell them at a garage sale. What's going to happen?
Yep.
Oh,
man. I don't know how the hell we got there. I feel like I just derailed that whole thing. Yeah, I don't think it's depressing. I mean it in a very encouraging way.
Yeah.
But I think that kind of brings me to my question for you. I'd like to flip that on its head and pose the same question to you in terms of just, like, what are the big things that, like, you have learned, and where does your mindset look like right now on November 14th?
Man, I'm going back and forth on a couple things. Number one, mm-hmm. I've learned that I can really, really trust my scouting. Like, that's something that I, you know, I've worked really hard to hone over the years and whatnot, but I always get worried that, like, I don't have enough time to do scouting. Like, I don't have enough time to scout or whatever. And this year I didn't have time. Now, do I have these places, like, totally dialed in and figured out? No. But at the same time, like, I scouted very quickly. I got on deer and, like, things are looking really good. So, that's been really good. Really, my whole perspective shift when I got a place here close to home, and I'm like, man, I need to get busy passing this down to my kids. You know, like, for some, like, that really took hold in me this year. And so we've talked about it. I've taken some steps, got a little crossbow, for the kids, for everybody, everybody listen, for the kids. I promise I do not shoot it daily. I do. Every day. I shoot my compound every day too, but I shoot that crossbow every day.
It's ridiculously fun.
Oh my gosh. I shoot it off the back deck. 30 yards, 40 yards, 80 yards. Doesn't matter. Driving tacks. The scope's got little rings and the rings go up and down. So the rings are dialed in. So from, like, the top ring is 20 yards and it goes all the way out to 100. And I haven't pushed it to 100 yet, but everywhere I've pushed it, it's been dead on.
Really?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
So that you don't have to set each individual ring or anything.
No, you put in the speed of your crossbow and then sight it in at 40, I think it was. And then it sets the rest for you.
Got it.
And so it's amazing. My kids are breaking arrows at 20 yards, which is awesome. My 6-year-old is shooting it a ton, which is great. You know, so I think we're going to go try to kill a buck this afternoon, actually.
Oh, yeah. There's
a good chance of that. So I'm about to go get them off the school bus here in a second. But yeah, man, that's what I've learned, trusting my scouting. That's where my mindset is like, let's get this passed on. And then at the same time, I want to hunt but there's part of me that feels like it's too late in the season. So I do have kind of a war going on here of like, did I miss the best of it? You know, is it a waste of my time? Do I need to just call it quits and hunt this place that's, you know, right out my back door rather than driving an hour to the lease or 5 hours to our property or whatever? You know, so I'm still kind of torn in that regard, but, you know, I'm very hopeful, man. I got bucks all over the place on camera. Things are looking really good right now. I think the last 3 days is really when things have started to kind of bust open just a little bit as far as the rut here in Georgia. And so, yeah, man, I'm feeling pretty hopeful. I'm hoping I get another good, I don't know, 4 to 5 days of really high quality hunting before the rut starts to taper off here.
Yeah, absolutely. The one thing I will say in response to your concerns that the best has come and gone is as that peak has come and gone, just remember that I don't know what percentage, but I would say the vast majority of individuals' rutcations, hunting time and hunting trips have already come and gone.
Oh yeah.
So the woods from here on out are obviously until rifle season's already open for you guys down there, but for us here in Wisconsin,
October.
That's absurd.
October. Yeah.
That's absolutely absurd.
It's dumb.
For the rest of us, I would say this week leading up to gun season here, the pressure is just tapering down. You know what I mean? Obviously, it's going to be a shit show on Saturday morning. It's going to be a mess. Buckle up. Wear your orange. Make sure you're shooting straight and everything before then. But, like, there's still a lot of season left. And I think that's what I'm really hanging on right now is just that there's still plenty of time. And the bucks are still rutting. And, you know, like they say, it's the bell curve, right? So, sure, yeah, maybe the 7th, 8th, 9th, whatever was the peak. By that math, we should still be hunting just as well, if not a little bit better, because I feel like we kind of got through that initial lockdown phase, I think, at least. The hunting and the chasing, the seeking should be through the roof this week. Now, it might not be as crazy as it was that last week of October into the first week of November, but we've got a lot of really good hunting left, especially this week. So, folks, get your butts out there. Josh, if you had to leave us with 3 tips for this coming week for those folks hunting the rut. I should have given you time to prepare for this, but you got them. All right. What do we got?
Got them. All right. Number one, from my experience in Wisconsin, this is the best week to hunt leading up to gun season. When is this going to launch?
This is going to launch this coming Tuesday. So it'll be like the 18th.
Will it be 19th. After gun season or before?
Before. We got a late gun season this year, dude.
Oh, that's right. That's right. It's as late 23rd. As it can be this year, right?
Yep.
That's like as late as it can be. Okay. So, number one, that means that the gun deer harvest there in Wisconsin is going to be lower. Typically, you watch the ebb and flow of it. This is going to be one of the lower years because that rut activity begins to taper off. I am convinced that the 12th, 13th, 14th, 15th, 16th, 17th, 18th, like that range of time, is the best time to kill an absolute giant. When I've seen booners in Wisconsin, that's when I've seen them. Well, I say booner. I didn't put a tape to him because he was directly underneath my tree and scared the crap out of me. But, yes. So this is time to get out there. Like, it is definitely, the best is definitely not, has not passed. When I've seen, you know, giants tailing a doe, it's been that late doe. That's the first piece of advice. Number two, you talked about micro sits and sitting all day. Pierce, I'm curious, how many bucks have you seen and killed on average? Like, what percentage of the mature bucks that you see, especially this time of year, are first light, last light bucks? And what percentage would you say are between 9:30 in the morning and 2:30 in the afternoon?
I would probably say like 30-70, respectively.
Okay, so 70% in the middle of the day?
I would say so, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I can think of like actual encounters where I've had a legitimate shot at a slammer at last light during the rut.
Right.
At last, yeah. it's happened twice, I think.
Yeah.
Twice.
Right.
In 14 years, 15 years. Yeah.
So this is the time where you get a break between meetings in the middle of the day, 3-4 hours, go do a microsit. Go jump in the woods and get out there and do it. You 100%. Can't get, you got to take your kids to school tomorrow morning. Don't let that stop you, dude. Who cares if you get in the stand at 8:30? Like, you know,
doesn't matter these days.
Yeah, it does not matter. Now's the time to be in the woods in the middle of the day. So, that's that second week. That's that micro sit. And then I think, yeah, it just spending time. And I guess that kind of goes back to the last one, but spending time. So let me give you a real third one. Yeah. It's all got to do with mindset, man. Do something that pushes you outside of what's comfortable, because if you don't, you're going to start to feel miserable. You're not going to dig it anymore. Like, I feel like trying new things, learning new things, failing is what, I don't know, keeps me alive and feeling alive when I'm hunting. So keep doing that, whatever that looks like.
100%, dude. I could not agree more with the mindset piece. I think that's going to be my number one. My number two is going to be scout your tail off when you do take that midday hunt, when you're going in and out. Like, you have to gather fresh intel right now. You have to be looking for tracks. You have to be looking for those scrapes that are just pounded.
It's not too late for new stuff to pop up. Like, I've seen, like, 2 years ago, at a place.
Oh, no.
You better. Oh, my gosh. All right, Pierce. You got it.
That. I'm going to cut that one.
All right. 57 minute mark roundabout. Man, I can't even remember what I was going to say now. Oh, you know, out there.
Up.
Yeah. Out there hunting. And you know, I'm 7 or 8 days into the hunt at this point, and I go into a spot that I hunted the first day where there was no sign. Now there's sign everywhere. I set up and I see a new buck that afternoon. So like, they're still doing this jockeying thing. Like, don't think that they've got their ranges set and they're not going anywhere else, because he may pop on your property and be there for 2 weeks.
Absolutely. I was just going to say, and that the number of scrapes that I saw open up in the last week that weren't there when I was hanging cameras in November, like, I'm sure you've seen the same thing.
Yep.
Like, they are adamant about getting territorial and laying down that sign right now. So find the hot sign. And that last point that I think I have for folks this week is, get aggressive. Like, if you've been sitting there looking at a bedding area from 150 yards out, now's the time to get your ass in there and throw a sit at it. Like, it is. Because if you don't, next week, somebody with a gun and an orange cap is going to be back in there. And then what happens? We all know that after gun season, things get kind of squirrely. But right now, I would say, get aggressive, scout your tail off, keep a positive mindset, like a pioneering mindset, you know? Get in there, you know, shoot from the hip on all your hunts, and it'll be reckless, but like, you know, have some little bit of reason behind it, but don't get so locked into your plans or anything that you're keeping yourself out of the game. Now is the time to get in there, find the hot sign, and freaking hunt it. So
that's right.
I don't know, man. This has me fired up.
Me too.
Note of you know, what time are most of these mature bucks, that I had my target buck show up at 11:23 right before we hopped on here. So I tell you what, buddy, I am going to press stop on this thing. I'm going to go get my stuff on, and I am going to get my butt in a tree for this afternoon and evening.
Right on, buddy. Good luck.
I appreciate it, man. Folks, good luck to all of you out there. Be safe. Make sure that rifle's dialed in for this upcoming weekend, and good luck out there.
That's all for this week's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you liked this episode, please be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're at it, if you could leave me a 5-star review, I would appreciate that a ton. You can also follow along with my outdoor adventures on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube at the Wisconsin Sportsman Pod. That's also the best way to get a hold of me to suggest topics, guests, or questions you'd like me to explore in this show. Big thanks to our awesome partners, XOP, Onyx, and Huntworth. Please go support the brands that support this show. And if you're looking for more awesome outdoor content, go check out thesportsmansempire.com, where you'll find a ton of other outdoor podcasts. And until next time, make sure you make the time to get outside and enjoy the incredible natural resources that are ours as Wisconsin sportsmen.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.